You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to Psyched by MG. This is Mary Grace Randazzo-Ratliff, or MG for short. I've been a psychotherapist in private practice for 32 years now. Guess what, everyone? We all have issues. So it's time to lighten up and move forward. Let's stop letting our crap control us and take control of our crap.
Hello, hello. Hi. Hello. Hello, Matthew. Hello, Matt.
Hello.
Hello.
Evening, everybody who's watching and listening. First. I want everyone to stop what they're doing, and I want them to click like, especially if you're watching us right now on Facebook Live television, and please click like on my page. It's really important to us. Write a comment, give us ideas. We appreciate it. And we take your ideas and we create shows around them. So you can also find us on Podcast Detroit and Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, of course, right here. You can find us on all those different platforms. Just look at Psyched by MG and our podcast will come up. We really, really need you to click like, leave a comment, and definitely give us your thoughts, because we say every week, you know, they're so important to us, and they really are. And they give us, you know, an idea of what is important to you and what you want to hear about. So please, 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 right now, hit like, do it right now. Okay. So next, Matthew Burrito's with me.
Yes, I am. Hello, everyone. It's good to be back.
Oh, we're back. We are back. That is for sure.
Yes.
And tonight, you know, as I advertised, we are going to talk about rationalizing a problem to the point of neglect and denial. We're going to get to that in just a moment. And what led to, like, why I actually chose the subject for tonight. But before that, Matthew, I was reading, I can't remember where I was, Facebook led it to me or whatever, social media, but I was reading and I found this inspirational story. And it's a story of encouragement, and it's called The Group of Frogs.
Okay.
And I want to read it tonight before we get started. And it goes, as a group of frogs were traveling through the woods, two of them fell into a deep pit. When the other frogs crowded around the pit and saw how deep it was, they told the two frogs that there was no hope left for them. However, the two frogs decided to ignore what the others were saying, and they proceeded to try and jump out of the pit. Despite their efforts, the group of frogs at the top of the pit were still saying that they should just give up, that they would never make it out. Eventually, one of the frogs took heed to what the others were saying, and he gave up, falling down to his death. The other frog continued to jump as hard as he could. Again, the crowd of frogs yelled at him to stop the pain and just die. He jumped even harder and finally made it out. When he got out, the other frog said, "Did you not hear us?" The frog explained to them that he was deaf. He thought they were encouraging him the entire time. The moral of the story? People's words can have a big effect on others' lives. Think about what you say before it comes out of your mouth. It might just be the difference between life and death. I just thought that was such a great story for right now. I really did. And especially with what you and I deal with every week, and the stress that everyone is under. And, you know, Matthew and I talk about our offices are overflowing, wait lists for mental health. Mental health is having its own pandemic right now, because we don't have enough therapists to treat everybody. Anxiety disorders are through the roof. Suicide rates are through the roof. Marriages and divorce rates are up. Alcoholism is severely up. I think it's up by 40%. This pandemic and the stress that everyone has been going through is really kicking people's asses. Mm. And so when I thought about that story, if you got people in your life who are telling you to just lay down, get rid of them. Like, please, 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 please. Keep listening to our podcast, because we're here to let you know this too shall pass. It will get better. But a great lead in is you got to deal with your problems. Look at them, and you got to seek the resources that can help you to get on the other side of them. And I have a plaque in my office. Matthew knows we share an office that says, on the other side of fear, you will always find freedom. On the other side of fear, you always find freedom. And I wanted to bring this up because when you look at rationalizing a problem to the point of neglect and denial, that has to do with not going on the other side of fear in a lot of cases. And I wanted to read the actual, Webster Dictionary description of rationalizations. And it's an action attempting to explain or justify behavior or an attitude with logical reasoning, even when these are not appropriate, even when the reasoning is not appropriate. So people do it. It's an emotional conflict that you wish to conceal and not deal with. And I think people need to understand that is what rationalizing is. When a problem comes up and you get uncomfortable, you have to get to know what you do with that. And are you someone who's developed a defense mechanism that rationalizes away the problem so you never cope with it, and therefore you repeat the same problems over and over and over again to the point of denial, to the point of acceptance of the problem? So I want people to realize it is not easier to rationalize a problem and not deal with it, because you make it stay in front of you for a very long time. That is harder to do than to deal with the stress and the hard part of going through it. And the key is, don't do it alone. Let people help you. Read about whatever it is you're dealing with. Depression, suicide, alcoholism, job stress. Believe me, there are authors that have written about all of this. If you don't want to go to a therapy, a therapist is a coach for all this. So it's so important, because, and Matthew knows this, I said, I want to do this show. And we may be doing another show where we bring in some, the head of the teachers union, we might bring in some teachers, as a parent of a high schooler. COVID-19, the denial of it and the rationalizations that I am constantly and chronically hearing are driving me insane. And Matthew, we deal with this every day in our office. People will come in with the problem that repeats itself. They're so fatigued from that problem, and they'll begin that rationalization process. And rationalizations sound like what? Say they're dealing with a marital issue, a couple's issue, and they get mad at their spouse for I don't know. It can be anything. Drinking, it can be they don't clean up, it can be whatever it is. And that person will say, yeah, and I'll say, well, how have you talked about it? How have you addressed it? Oh, there's no use in addressing it because they don't listen. Okay, so help me to get to know how you've addressed it in the past that has taught you that the person doesn't listen. Oh, well, if I've got to tell him, you know, then come on, he's got to grow up or she's got to grow up. Or I've said, pick up your fucking shit. I'm tired of picking it up. I'm like, wow. Okay. All right. So there's something wrong with your approach. And each time we explore, like, give me the process you use to deal with the problem, no matter what the process, tell me what the process is. This is what therapists do. Tell me how you cope. And we're listening in that process to see how effective it is. And when we got to talk to the person who is talking about the problem, and we got to tell the person that they're a part of the problem, that they have a responsibility to deal with the problem, not to fix it, because they can on their mm-hmm. own. It's a couple's issue. They can't. Mm-hmm. You know, Matthew, as well as I do, when we start to tell them, we hear the famous, yeah, but. Yeah, but. Yeah, yeah, I hear you, but. Yeah, yeah, but you got to know more. You don't know enough. Yeah, but. Yeah, but. Oh, yeah, 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 I get that. Yeah, yeah, but. That freaking yeah. 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 And we teach clients about the yeah, but. Yeah, but you are accommodating me and nodding, and that but is telling me the truth. Whatever comes after that but, that's exactly how you feel. Mm-hmm. It's
when I also reframe, I try to reframe, as you know, too, just thinking about our thinking, where it's instead of, you know, replacement of certain words, and we know language is so important, as you were just pointing out too at the beginning, when, you know, instead of but, inject however, right? So that however means you have to think about what you're about to just say. And what, so when you're saying, well, I have to do this, and instead of, well, yeah, but, it's, well, yeah, however, and the however stops the person in their track. Now, it's not a cookie cutter, you know, one size fits all, because that's just one approach. But when we're talking about denial, I mean, and you know, I'm big on language, and like linguistically, I always point this out because I think it's really important. And just as you read from Webster's, it's like when we're talking about denial, we're talking about a refusal. So we're talking about a refusal to admit. So like, I'm going to and saying this slower because it really is helpful to hear it, a refusal to admit the truth or reality.
Yes.
So it's not that, and this is, it's your volition. And that's what you were pointing out at the beginning, is that, you know, you can change, you can actually be as much of a participant as you are. And sometimes it's a struggle to help, you know, individuals recognize their participation in that, you can equally participate in changing that.
That's right.
And it's right. And it seems a bit solution focused with that, because I don't mean to diminish how hard it is, because it's hard, it's tough.
Yes.
But as we've pointed out, we've, you know, when we've talked about other things, and even like weight and health, right? Imagine, right, if you put today off to tomorrow, and then tomorrow becomes 3 years.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's what we see sometimes in our offices, is that sometimes these things that have been put off for a day or two, I'm just, you know, Mary Grace, I'm going to wait, you know, it's Tuesday. Okay. Get off my back. Okay. I'm just going to wait until the weekend. It's a few days. Lay off me. Well, then for everyone listening, I was just joking. but for the weekend comes, and guess what? Something else came up. And that's called life, and life on life's terms. So now that Tuesday became 2019, then 2020, then 2021, do you want 2000, do you want another month, another year to pass you by? Because that's what's happening. You don't get a do-over. And I think, you know, that's also, I think, a helpful resource too, in addition to, like you said, I mean, therapists help to do kind of impress upon the importance of time and exploring like a time frame for, okay, you know what? It's been this long. I'm going to push you a little harder. We're going to move on. We're going to move it now. We're going to move it and we're going to adjust the pointer here. And, you know, if you can't do that, there's groups, there's, you know, books out there, but making the decision, making the decision and trusting that there's going to be help too.
Yes. You know, with addictions, and it's not just addictions, it's what you are avoiding. But I say addiction is a disease of rationalizations. I've said this for years in working in substance abuse. Alcoholism, drug addiction, food addiction, whatever the addiction is, you have to understand the disease in your head is a disease of rationalizations. You will rationalize your way back to the behavior that's killing you, that's making you sick, that's causing an argument with your partner. And the longer you do that, you make yourself crazy. You feed delusions. We see this in Matthew Knows. We've seen this in addictions all the time. When we're working in addictions, we say there's three outcomes. Sobriety, where you clean your head up because you got a lot of stinky thinking. Insanity, because you rationalize your behavior so bad that it kills you or kills somebody else. And death. That's the three outcomes of addiction. Sobriety, where you clear your head up, you clear your body up, you gain control of your life again. Insanity, death. And we ain't being dramatic. We aren't being dramatic at all. When you have a problem in front of you, whether it's weight gain, whether it's, you know, a conflict with your spouse, when you're stuck, you're stuck. You've got to let people in. First up, denial and rationalizations only keep you on the freaking hamster wheel. And when you stay on that hamster wheel with a problem, you not only exhaust and fatigue yourself and feel more hopeless, you feel despair, you lose the connection from your own power and ability to change a problem, but that has a ripple effect to everyone in your life. Because, see, when we care about you and love you and you don't help yourself and you keep hurting yourself, it hurts us. It scares us. It freaks us out. But we don't have the power to save you. We can stand next to you. We can support you. As therapists, we can give you tools that you got to put to work. But we can't change you or save you. And it's heart-wrenching. So that denial, that rationalization, that avoidance has the biggest mother effing ripple effect. And in some lives, and I know there are people that are listening right now, some of the people that are doing the denying and the rationalizing of bad behaviors that are wrong, that are hurting them, that are hurting others, those waves turn into tidal waves and it takes people out.
Well, and I think you said it perfectly in terms of the tidal waves, you know, to help people recognize, you know, I remember one of my close friends years ago would talk to me and she would say, you know, I'm just, in our conversations, she would say, you know, don't apologize for impressing upon people the importance and impressing upon people the seriousness. And that's what we do over time. You know, over time, we're impressing upon the people that we serve, the people that we work with, the importance and the seriousness of it. And sometimes even too, when, you know, also from, and for, you know, people who are listening too, and also the, you know, the individuals I work with, you know, I do often bring into the mix of working in the jails and prisons, and how the addiction and how the disease of that rationalization, and it doesn't even have to be addiction, it can be making these bad choices. And could it start with having a bad day? Yes. Yes. For people listening, it can start with just something as, and this is the verbiage, it just started with something as simple as me having a bad day. I woke up on the wrong side of the bed, said thousands of people that I've worked with in the jails and prisons. And so it leads to, again, that, like, as you've mentioned, that disease of rationalization. And, you know, the disease part, for people who are listening, that brings in the science. That brings in, so when we say that, we're, you know, it's important because it brings in the science of our biology and the science and the biology of our pain. Because our bodies, you know, and you and I have spoken about this, and we've talked about it, you've talked about it. There's, you know, there is this science to addiction and science of addiction, and there's the science of pain and how we experience it. And so, you know, if you fall down and you scrape your knee, what do? You get alcohol, or hopefully you're finding someone to help you. But that's, for some people listening, that might not be what your experience is or what your culture provides for you. And that's what can sometimes also continue to perpetuate the thinking, the faulty thinking, that no one's out there to help you, or no one's, this really isn't that big of a deal, is part of that disease of rationalization, the brain communicating with the body that it's just not that big of a deal. And so then when we come in, I say we collectively, the therapists and, you know, kind of just change agents, if you will, it's like, we sound sometimes, and I don't use this word, and I tell my clients we don't use the word crazy in my office, but in our office. But it's like, we don't use that. It's not, but we sound like it sometimes when we're confronting the denial, when we're confronting, you know, that part of our brain that has been communicating with our body inappropriately and irrationally. And so that's why we have people, and you've said this before too, is that, you know, not rationalizing bad behavior. Well, we also, we're here to help not rationalize bad thinking and faulty thinking. And so what happens when you keep thinking something that isn't rooted in a fact, right? So it could start out with, oh God, I was never going to get that promotion. And I'm just not even worthy of that promotion. And how does someone get from that to drinking or shooting up heroin or snorting cocaine, losing their job, repossession of cars, losing their house? How do they get from there? Very simply, they start to feed, as you know, using your word, they feed that disease of rationalization. They feed the denial. They're not allowing themselves to actually challenge what faulty thinking is happening.
Yeah. I mean, it makes me think about, you know, you and I have both spent years in addictions, and I cannot tell you how many cases where I'm working with the addict, and, you know, the addict is explaining to me, and I've had this so many times, this is not one particular person that I'm thinking about, but an addict, say, who's been arrested several times, DUIs, and comes in, and I say, geez, you know, what do you think led to all these arrests, you know, that are alcohol related? Well, the cops have it in for me. Yeah, but some of these arrests aren't in the state. Oh, well, they talk to each other. And I'm thinking, as I'm hearing this guy's logic or this woman's logic, I've had women do this too. Oh my gosh, their rationalization is so bad. And we have phases to addiction, you know, three phases to addiction. And in my head, I'm thinking, oh crap, I got to check out and see how much they're rationalizing. And if you're sitting there and you've had, say, 20 arrests, DUIs, which that's not exaggerating, and you're sitting there and your brain is saying, oh, it's because they have it in for me. And I'll say, well, were you drinking that night that they picked you up? Oh, well, yeah. What'd you blow? Oh, I blew a .228. So you were drinking and you blew over the limit, which automatically makes you a drunk driver, but you only got stopped because the cops are out for you. And they'll look you dead in the eyes and go, yeah, yeah. And so I'll say, so do you think you're an alcoholic? No, no. And I think to myself, oh, crap, this brain is shot. This is phase three alcoholism. When you have so many things in life trying to stop you, saying this is a problem, you're having consequences because this behavior is going to kill you. It's hurting you. Here's an opportunity. Here's a limit. Do something. And you sit back and say, oh, but it's not my fault. We talk about addictions, you know, at the heart of addictions is narcissism, where you don't take responsibility for everything. It's always everyone else's fault that your problems happen. Nope, not if there's a pattern. And you rationalize. And I remember one addict that I had years ago that I said to this person, I can't see you anymore because you rationalize this dangerous behavior. And I've just been doing this for so long that you only get so many lives. You're going to die. I cannot watch you die. I care about you. I cannot take it. You have to go. The person looked at me and said, are you kicking me out? And I said, you're damn right I am. Because the work that we're doing, it's not working. You got to fall in a way that I think could possibly kill you. But I cannot watch you die. He scared the guy so bad, he went into a recovery program. And the guy that called me from the recovery program said, will you talk to him? I said, no. Let him finish your recovery program. Because the rationalizations are going to kill him. I care enough to do tough love. I care enough about this guy. I don't want him to die. And I'm telling you right now, the rationalizations of bad behaviors, bad choices, choices that are hurting you, choices that are breaking apart your marriage, choices that you have an argument because you drink too much and your spouse is saying, I can't take it anymore. And you flip that script around and you say it's her fault or it's his fault. Because you're bitching too much, there's a rationalization right there. Or the situations, and I think about battering relationships. You know, there's another saying that I say to clients is it is when you rationalize bad behavior, you can no longer protect yourself from it. Bad behavior is bad behavior. So if you have a partner that blames you all the time, doesn't take responsibility, abuses you, mistreats you, disrespects you, does intellectual domination of you, makes you constantly feel insecure, you're rationalizing bad behavior. And you're to the point you're not protecting yourself from it. Bad behavior needs limits, period. Bad behavior needs limits, period. If that bad behavior hurts people and puts people at risk, not wearing a mask, it needs a limit. Matthew, I think we should tell the story of Home Goods.
Oh, yeah. Well, dude, yeah, I mean, so initially, when I had walked in, I had actually seen it because, you know, I have eyes of a hawk for that stuff. I just, when, you know, just being an ad, being a change agent, being bold, and as we both we both can be, and I often, you know, and I pray to be bold because that's what we're doing, right? To speak up when others might feel powerless to speak up. And sure. I noticed it, but I almost, again, I didn't even want to believe it. So I was even initially entering into a phase of denial because I did not want to accept the reality that here is the law. Here is something that, you know, is laid out for all of us to all, you know, patrons and consumers to wear a mask. And, you know, they stand at the door with hand sanitizer, checking, numerically checking how many people are in the store. So, you know, for our safety and their safety. I thought, no, there's no way. That cannot be. And so we're still going around.
And my daughter said, I didn't see the guy. And Amelia said to me, "Mom, that guy's not wearing a mask." But Matthew and Jamal and I have seen it. So we're going to say something to the cashier. We're going to tell the people. And I'm like, oh, no. Oh, hail to the no. We need to talk to this guy. And I couldn't find him at that point. And then we all got in line. And my blood is a boiling. And I see him. And I walked over to him and I said, "Sir, please put your mask on." And he looks at me and said, "I don't have to." I said, "Yes, you do." Matthew behind me says, "Yes, you do. By law, you do." Mm-hmm. And I said, "You don't have a mask, do you?" And he said, "No." I said, "You know what? This infuriates me. You do not have the right to do this." Well, the lady next to us, this wonderfully bold, powerful woman, just turns it over and just, I don't know if she was a nurse who dealt with it every day. Her passion was, she said, you know, a few choice words. Letting him know how wrong he was to be in that store without a mask, to put us at risk. Mm-hmm. And he walked out pretty quickly. And we all turned to each other because she was apologizing for her beautiful language that I had no problem with. And we said, "No, we've got to speak up. It's not okay. This is not politics. This is safety. This is not all right. It is wrong." And I have to go into, I don't know if you know if I could get on that darn TikTok, but there was this young man who was in line at Starbucks. And this woman was arguing with the Starbucks worker who kept saying, "Please put your mask up, please." And she said, "I don't have to." And the guy tapped her on the shoulder and said, "Yes, please put your mask up." And she said, "No, I don't have to. It's my right to not wear a mask." And he said, "Oh." And he put his mask down. And he went, started coughing. And the woman who didn't have her mask on went, "Oh, what are you doing?" And he said, "Well, I'm a COVID nurse." And she goes, "What?" Now the girl who doesn't have her mask on is panicking. And he said, "Oh, that's right." And he put his mask up. And he goes, "I wear this to protect you. Do you think you could do the same for her or for me?" And the woman put her mask up. When you rationalize bad behavior, irresponsible behavior, and go into denial, and it hurts other people, that choice, you're wrong. Period. You're wrong. And you and I know, dealing with addictions, whether it's an individual or couples or families, when people are saying to that person who's making choices, driving in the car drunk with the kids in the car, eating sugar when their diabetes is really bad and they have serious health problems, mm-hmm. never coming home to help the partner with the kids or dinner or being responsible, whatever it is, when you're rationalizing that, and then you're, we call it flipping the script, blaming the people for bothering you, you're wrong. You're wrong. And I'm going to come after you. I'm not coming after you to hurt you. I'm coming after you to get your disease of rationalizations in a place of sanity so that your life changes. It's called tough love. Tough love. We got to bring those words back. Tough love. It's where I know and you're circling a drain and you're going to get hurt and I care enough about you to say, stop circling the drain. Take my hand and pull back because you're going to kill yourself. You're going to hurt someone else. I mean, how many people that I treated in addictions, drug addicts, alcoholics, and you can smell and sense when you work with addicts over years, like if they don't get it, they don't get it. Oh, shit, you know the bottom's about to fall out. And the bottom falls out. I've had cases where I've gotten a phone call from the hospital that says, oh, my God, I just killed someone. I had one case. I killed four people in the car. What do you think I feel when I get that phone call? You want to know what my first thought is? God damn it. Son of a bitch. I want to just go into that brain and just pop it and go, really? You're going to prison now. They lost their family. I've had people in those phone calls say, oh my God, you said this was going to happen to me. And I said, yeah, and your stinky thinking and your rationalization disease was so bad, you were deaf, dumb, and blind. Oh, it's not going to happen. Oh, this is no, everybody has a few cocktails and drugs. It's no big deal. My God, you always blow it up. You blow it out of proportion. Oh my God, will you stop your bitching? You don't know how to have fun. Anybody listening ever heard those? Quit nagging me. My God. Or the famous, I never said I would. I never said I would stop. I never said I wasn't going. The poor partner goes, what are you talking about? You just said it last night. You promised me. You promised me. I didn't say you're so screwed up in the head. You're just screwing this up. I never said that. What are you talking about? And then people get hurt over and over and over and over again. When I work with addicts, pop them right in the head. Emotionally, I go right at it. One time I said to someone who was rationalizing so bad drug addiction, cocaine's bad. I said, you're so full of shit, your eyes are brown. Person was rationalizing all their problems. I said, you're so full of shit, your eyes are brown. The person looked at me. Very, very high intelligent person said, what did you just say to me? I said, you're so full of shit. You rationalize so much. You're killing yourself. If you looked in the mirror, you look like shit. You are dying. And you think your head is right and you're going to convince me how right you are? What the hell are you doing in my office? This wonderful person said, I need your help. He said, I'm right there. But I'm going to tell you, you're going to do it my way. Because your brain has got such bad, stinky thinking, it's delusional. You think it makes sense and it doesn't. My job is to reality check you, just like your family tried to. And for people who live with this and watch the rationalizations, you've got to give people consequences. Bad behavior is bad behavior. You set limits with it. Because they have to feel the consequences of their choices. That's where the hope is. That's where the opportunity for change is. If you're in a relationship and that partner belittles you, puts you down, won't hear you, won't participate, is irresponsible, and you keep rationalizing why they do. Oh, they had a tough childhood. We hear this from Matthew. Oh, my partner had a tough childhood, though. I feel so bad for them. I'm going to tell you right now, your childhood is not an excuse to do bad things. Mm-hmm. Childhood is not an excuse to do bad behaviors. You still need to be responsible to change your life and to grow up an adult fully. Matthew and I have had really tough childhoods. We've had a lot of shit to clean up. It's not an excuse to be responsible.
Well, and it's also affording yourself the time, as I was mentioning earlier. This isn't just like you get to do it over again. And so that's part of also the denial, and that leads to the neglect. I mean, when you don't give yourself the time, you're neglecting yourself. And that's that's where it starts, in that pre-contemplation, where you're not even noticing any problem. You're not aware of any problem. You're not even acknowledging that anything happening. And you hear me say this, where I'm like, I got to eat crow. I'm going to have so much iron in my body because I'm eating crow, where it's like, I have to reflect and I have to hold the mirror up to myself. And I have to say, holy cow, look at what I've been thinking and look at where I really needed to get to with my thinking. And that's how, it's like when you hear those, kind of idioms of, the teacher becomes the student becomes the teacher, the therapist becomes the patient becomes the therapist. That's how you gain that. That's called wisdom. And so when you stick it out, and, especially, it really is sad when we talk what we're talking about. So, it is depressing and it is sad, but, I would say to, a lot of the, I think part of it is finding somebody who can help you. I mean, that's part of it. There is the stigma, and it still exists, that you just got to do everything on your own. And I would always say it to the individuals in jail and prison. I would say, I'm like, you didn't come into this world doing everything on your own, did you? Did someone feed you? Did someone bathe you? Did someone? And they would say no. And I would expect that. Well, yeah, look at you talking. No, I didn't. And I said, okay, but at some point, have you ever had a relationship? Have you ever had a friend? Have you ever worked? Have you ever done anything? Have you ever done something for yourself to know how it feels to do something and then reap the reward of doing something? And that's, that type of thinking helps pull you out of that vicious cycle. And that's an understatement, but pulls you out of that vicious cycle of being in that eye of the storm and thinking like, well, it's not so bad. Never mind the fact everything around you is spinning up a tunnel and crashing down and blowing up. And you recognize that life around you is, it feels like it's imploding, and you feel yourself imploding yourself. And like you said, talking to people who it was just a normal, regular Tuesday night for somebody, or it was just a normal, regular Thursday night for somebody. And they happen to drive under the influence, under illicit substances or inebriation. And then their life was forever changed. Vehicular manslaughter, and who knows, depending on the rage, if it was a breakup, but they decided to use substances. Again, all these areas in our brain that, you're neglecting the sensors. You're neglecting the sensors. Your body communicates with you. And it communicates with you when something bad might happen. And what we do, and what has also been part of in this climate lately, has taught people is to ignore those sensors. Do the bad thing. Things will work out anyway. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? Coming from people who are millionaires and billionaires, they're not so worried about what's going to happen, because they'll have 40 to 100 to thousands of fall people for their bad behavior, where you, for anyone listening, is going to have yourself to fall. And when you fall, it's going to feel really hard when you're in a 9x9 cell and you're having to wonder where you're, about your safety, about, where your next meal is going to be, or if anybody's going to care enough to, still be there for you because of something horrendous and egregious that took place. Like a car crash, or, whatever it might be, if it's manslaughter, if it's, attempted murder. I mean, that disease and the rationalization, but the neglect of those sensors, these red flags, and you start to train yourself And that's why it's so insidious, is that your brain starts to train itself to ignore the sensors and that insensitivity to the pain. So then you created a pattern that has allowed you to be emboldened in the neglect and the disease of rationalization and that denial to ignore truth. And that's what we, part of how I view the work that we do is truth seekers. That's what I, you know, I've used that terminology before. We are truth seekers. It's not meant to feel good all the time, because when we're asking these tough questions, right, and someone says, oh gosh, you know, what about what she, you know, he or she was doing? What about what they did in the relationship? And I said, okay, now that I've heard that, what about what you were culpable about? Right? What did you do? Because guess what? That person is going to go on and have many other victims. I'm not denying the fact. I'm also not going to enable the denial, because you're absolutely right. The person you were with probably probably was a dud. But having said that, what about you? Because they're going to be that person, and they've consistently been that person. But you keep rationalizing, which leads you to being with those people, right? Specifically in the example of relationships, right? I just can't understand why I'm finding these same people. I don't know. Why are you? What do you keep on swiping away and swiping away and washing away from the writings on the wall? So life is teaching you lessons and putting the writings on the wall, and you're saying, the hell with it. You know what? I'm better. I know better than life. And that's not the truth. And that's where the denial comes from. Again, you deny the truth of life teaching you a lesson.
Yeah.
And thinking you know better, that's called arrogance. That's called entitlement. Swallow your pride.
The difference between self-righteousness and righteousness. Mm-hmm. I know best.
Yeah. And guess what? We all know, proverbially, pride cometh before the fall. And that's when we're talking about this disease of rationalization and the neglect and the denial, not accepting truth, not even acknowledging that it exists. That's why you're falling. Yeah. You will fall, inevitably, irrevocably. I'll bet a whole year's salary, and I'll win. And I'm not a betting person. You know I'm not. And I always say that, but that is something I'm sure about. You will fall. You will fall, whether it's a scraped knee, scraped toe, broken limbs, metaphorically speaking, but you will fall. And sometimes literally, depending on what you're doing, if it's substance use and abuse, if it's rage, you might also hurt your body, and it might be lethal.
And you know, we have said this before, that to clients, to people, to friends, to family, you know, a lot of times therapists can be pulled in. You know, it isn't always in the therapy room. People want to know your opinion, but they don't want to know your opinion. They only want to hear your opinion if it fits what they want to hear. It's a tough situation. But I often say, you have no idea, when I'm right, it's horrible. I hate being right about something that I see, because it means you got hurt. It means you got hurt. For me, it's not about ego. I have to witness somebody rationalize and deny something to the point of getting hurt. And all I can do is say, let's look at your patterns. Look at where it keeps sending you. I hope you can hear me. I'm telling you right now, really take a look at the decision you're making right now. But I have to stand back, because I can't control. It's not about controlling you. It's about handing you the tool, and you get to throw it down on the ground, kick it, bury it, pick it up, use it. It's all up to you, because you have free will. This is what free will is about. No one should control you. And we know, you know, the people that, you know, have the tool, when they leave that office, you can sometimes tell the people who get out of the office and go, yeah, they don't know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. And they get hurt. How many sessions have you had? Person comes back, they're crying. I said, I want you to know, first of all, there's no part of this that feels good. For me, being right does not feel good because you just got hurt. I care about you. Now the key is, now that you've been through it, what are you going to gain from this? Gain from the hurt. You have the power now in this position to change it, to open it up, and now do the work in the hurt. And this is why there's got to be consequences to bad behavior. If you're going to create opportunity, you can't keep taking away the consequence from the person because they are not going to wake up. And if their disease of rationalization has been going on for a while, they need a consequence. Mm-hmm. In the field of substance abuse, we learned, I think it was back in the 70s or 80s, let's bring the bottom up. Make sure they get consequence after consequence so they don't have to fall so freaking hard to learn. Mm-hmm. And even then, and Matthew and I know, it's no guarantees because you can't fix somebody. You can try to support them, but you can't fix them. Some people, consequence, 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 it does lead to death. But that's not your fault. You will grieve that person who has not chosen what they need to do, but you do not blame yourself.
It's interesting as I'm hearing you say consequences, and you know, as I've had many conversations in our kind of mentorship, supervision, and talking about cases in the jail and prison, and kind of sharing some of just kind of some of the details of some of the stories and things that people share. And you know, I remember working with this one gentleman, and he had a long-standing history of gang violence affiliation. Because not all gangs are bad, and you know, not all gangs are bad and negative, but he had an affiliation with gang violence and substance use and abuse, and as well as selling and dealing drugs as well. And adding to that, making some other horrible decisions, as he described. And I just somehow was picking up, I'm like, I wonder if he's ever seen what he looks like on the other side. And that other side would be the, you know, kind of the mugshot, right? And I wondered, and it just, something came over me. And I said, you know, again, the reflection, and a reflection of ourselves can be the start and the beginning of a consequence. And I, you know, he was talking about something and about his past. And I said, you know, I want to show you someone. And I turned my screen and it had his picture. And he started bawling and crying and just, I mean, in the most precious way, because I could sense the pain leaving his body and really the breakthrough from the denial of the truth, the denial of accountability, which is the truth. And I asked him, I said, have you ever seen, I said, who is this man? And he again was still, you know, trying to come to and, you know, bring himself. And he said, you know, I have never seen that photo. No one has ever showed me a photo from my arrests or, you know, my mugshots. And I said, well, consider this a first, and hopefully consider this your last. And, you know, he had some struggles still. But from what I know and from what I believe, you know, was able to finish the remainder of his sentence. And from there on, I don't know. And I always send positive, you know, wishes to, again, like you said, you making a bad decision, you rationalizing, you denying truth doesn't make us feel good. And when we're trying to give you guidance as well, which then sometimes gets distorted in a transference with the client, who it might trigger them from someone in their past, like you had mentioned, reminding them of just kind of the ego getting involved. And it's like, no, I'm not trying to be right here. This isn't about right or wrong. This is about what I'm able to see from what you're describing and disclosing and discussing with us.
Exactly. It's hard to watch. You know, if we apply this to this pandemic, there are countries that are fine. There are countries that are fine. Why? Because everybody took it responsibly. You're tired of this thing. I'm tired of this thing. I'm tired of people rationalizing and denying that it's there, that it's serious. I'm so sick of it. It's beyond. There are teachers that are petrified. And this doesn't mean that parents aren't worn out, that people are, that it hasn't caused problems. But the way you deal with the problem is you go through it. You make the hard decisions. You deal with the ramifications. You don't deny. You don't rationalize. You don't argue about, is it there? Is it serious? It's there. And then we got to take responsibility. We have to do the adulting and deal with it. Mm-hmm. It's been a hard one. It's been a hard one for me to watch. As people who listen to the podcast know, we've been through COVID twice with my son. It's been a hard, we've lost family members. Matthew and I are on the front lines. We're treating these poor nurses and the doctors, and we're seeing the pain side of this whole thing. And I talked to a teacher this week who's petrified, and my heart just broke for her. We thought we were going into quarantine again this week. You know, Plymouth Canton Community Schools, they want to bring all the kids back by March 1. Well, they brought the ninth graders back in the first 5 days. They've had a COVID outbreak. Of course they had a COVID outbreak. Is the kid going to be okay? I hope so, the kids. But the kids went home. We deal with, Matthew and I deal with, the kid who comes in for a panic attack because they were around grandma and didn't know they had COVID. Does this mean I could kill my grandma? Now we got trauma, ripple effects. I can feel I'm getting, you know, intense right now. And some ways I apologize, but I'm done. I'm truly done with the rationalizations of this thing. And we see the underbelly. We see the ripple effects. We see the numbers. We see the pain. We see the anguish. And if you're going to turn and listen to us and say, oh, well, yeah, it's a small percentage or whatever rationalization you're going to do, you're full of shit. Then you who's rationalizing, please go volunteer in a COVID ward for me, please. Because if it's no big deal, there's no problem. Get in there. Like the guy that took his mask off. She freaked out. What are you freaking out for? There's no problem. There is a problem.
With a couple minutes left, Mary Grace, I'm wondering, what do you think, how would you summarize what we're talking about tonight? And what do you want the listeners to really, the biggest takeaway?
I want them to know what rationalizations are. When you say yes, but, no big deal, there's a real problem in front of you. And they start out small, warnings. And you say, yes, but, no big deal, I'll get to it later, what? And it comes back and you use the same rationalization again and again, people are going to get hurt. Not just you, but people who love you. And I'm not trying to beat the shit out of you. If you're doing that, I'm saying, please stop. Get help. Let people help you. You're on a hamster wheel. And you can kill people. When I look at this pandemic, or I look at alcoholism, and we've both seen addictions, you can kill people. There are consequences, and the longer you deny a problem, the risk of the severity of pain you cause somebody goes up and up.
And the risk of consequence increases too.
Yeah, because your problems don't disappear. They don't just, you have no magic wands that we can, or fairy dust that we can sprinkle over your head and they just disappear if you just don't look at them. I always say, look at first, that elephant comes into your living room and sits down. You deny, you deny, you deny. Eventually, it takes a big fat dump. Now you got the smell. You want to deny? Eventually, it rots, it dies, it gets sick, and it reeks. That's what happens. So my big message to everyone, as I just noticed the time, is number one, I hope you don't feel beat up by me. I hope you hear my sternness is care, just like I do in a session. And that we got to stop. You got to stop because it's hurting people. It's hurting people. It's not okay. I had a woman, Charlene, I think her name was, she wrote, I pray. And yeah, you can pray for these problems. God bless your heart. Pray. Also, don't avoid, don't deny, and don't rationalize. And if you're the person on the receiving end, you got to set limits.
Keep your eyes, ears, and heart open.
Eyes, ears, and heart open.
To the problems. Yep. So you don't avoid.
Yep.
Good ending.
Yep. All right, people. Well, thank you so much for joining us
tonight.
Thank
you.
See you live in 2 weeks. But of course, we're going to have a show up next Friday. And of course, on all of our podcast areas, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podcast Detroit, our favorite. And so we wish you well, and you have a good night.
Stay safe, everyone.
Stay safe.